Is it just nighttime retainer or is it all the time?
It's all the time for 2 months.
Why would you want different colors of retainers?
It doesn't matter because it's inside.
Oh, so you can have like a creepy like blood mouth or something?
I got one that glows.
Scotch.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 146 of Coffee with Butterscotch, the game dev comedy podcast of Butterscotch Shenanigans. I'm Seth and I'm the games programmer.
I'm Adam and I'm a content creator.
I'm Sam and I'm seasonally confused.
And this is a show where we talk about life, business, and working in the games industry. Today is April 6th. 2018. Before we get started,
I kind of feel like you had verbal bad kerning.
Yeah, kerned, that's about what that was.
You kerned it funny.
Kerned it up.
Before we get started, we have a warning. Anything could happen on this show. There's going to be profanity, lewdness, language. You name it, it's going to be there.
So if you're improper kerning,
if you're a child.
A typographist.
If you are a lowercase human being, you should not be listening to this.
But aren't children screaming almost all the time?
They are. It's very confusing. Well, they're in bold, you know.
Lowercase bold.
Lowercase bold.
Children are lowercase bold
and
humans.
In rainbow colors.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So if you're one of those, then get out of here, stop listening, go outside. Play with some sticks and dirt. Mm-hmm.
Unless you're in St. Louis where it is currently snowing for some stupid reason, mm-hmm. in which case stay inside. Drink some hot cocoa.
It's just your classic mid-April snowstorm.
Yeah.
You know? All right, you guys, listen. Mm. Hey, listen.
What?
Guys.
I'm listening.
What happened this week?
Was.
Wait, was that a question or are you getting ready to
state? I was trying to feel it.
Here it goes.
This is like a Mad Lib situation.
The Crashlands beta is happening.
The come over patch.
Right fucking now. we got like 100 people testing.
Yeah.
Testing this game through our abs program.
Mm-hmm, yeah, we opened up our abs.
We just
got some surgical instruments just poked in there.
I don't know. We bulked up our apps, by the way.
We did.
And we got about like 1,200 people in there.
Yeah, but we can only flex a few at a time.
Exactly. Because you don't want to burn out your apps.
You got a rippling 1,200 pack of abs.
Well, you only want to use about a tenth of the pack at once. Wait. Though. Otherwise, you get too tired.
We should probably mention abs is our anti-bug squad.
Oh, yeah. That's right.
That's our group of people who test stuff.
Who have signed up yet to be beta testers. Yeah.
Without context. Without good
retrospect.
It's very confusing.
Good call. So we invited, it ended up being about 170 people into the first wave of this beta. And it's been going on for, I guess, a week now. And it's been good.
Been real good. I don't think anybody's made it past the Savannah yet.
I don't think anyone's made it past getting it to work on Google Play.
That was weirdly the hardest part of the whole thing. Was mm-hmm. The problem was we had an old group of testers on Google Play. And you invite people into betas on Google through Google Plus communities.
It's like the one thing keeping it alive.
Yeah. And so there were people who had been in previous tests and moved into this new one, and mm-hmm. Google has been, you know, it's asynchronous, so it wasn't updating for some people and they couldn't get in.
I think it was mostly that just people didn't understand what was, because if you don't know, you need to know just enough about how these things work to just be able to guess why your thing didn't work in this case. Because people had, you know, if they have multiple email addresses and they're not actually sure which one Google is even looking at.
Exactly.
Right. Because you have one on the Play Store that you're logged into and then one on the Google group that you logged in mm-hmm. with. And
if they're not the same, then that's not going to work. But also if the depending on versioning, because Google Play won't overwrite by default, it won't overwrite an existing version of a game with one that's a lower version number.
Right.
And so if you got some version number things when you bounce between like two different beta programs or something, then that's going to throw you off. So there's just a little bit that if you don't know, you can just get real stuck.
I think the most active debugging that happened was actually exactly
Google
that.
Debugging.
Which is funny. But one of the bugs that I did see was funny, which I'll briefly mention. So if you die in hardcore mode, then you die permanently. Yeah. So you have to restart your game. And there's no story. It's very quick. It's much more sort of, you know, heightened tension sort of gameplay. And someone died, and then Juicebox, his face shows up and he's weeping. And then he converts to a score screen to show you how well you did. But someone's just got stuck on the weeping. And so Juicebox is just crying at them.
Well, they did is when they died before the... So when you die in Crashlands, a gravestone falls from the sky. And the moment the gravestone hits is the moment where sort of your death gets locked in. So there's like a 1 second...
Window.
And so the person paused the game and exited before the gravestone hit.
Right.
Because they're like, oh no, and they tried to cheat it, which is good because that's what we want, right?
Mm-hmm. We want
our testers to do that.
Yeah, testers try to cheat.
And so then they came back and then they were kind of, yeah, they just kind of like
stuck in this weeping juice box
loop. They got stuck in weeping juice box limbo. So
that's awesome.
You know, these are the kinds of fun experiences that you can have as a beta tester. Yep. So if you want to get involved in this kind of stuff, put your name in the ring.
In the abs.
Put your shorts in the ring, mm-hmm. Okay?
No, put some lotion on your abs.
Yep.
Put some lube up your abs.
Yep.
The URL is bit.ly/powerfulbscotchabs with hyphens in between.
Is that spelled out at the end also, or...
Insert. Yes. All lowercase, all uppercase.
First letters lowercase, hyphenated.
And for anyone who was bummed that you didn't get into the beta yet, it was basically a random draw.
Yep.
Because we only want so many people in there at a time. We're probably going to do another random draw
in a
later.
While.
Once we're getting about ready to launch, we need to test iOS and do some other, just kind of get some fresh blood in there. So you might still end up in there again, but mm-hmm. it's... You know, the blessing and the curse of having a lot of people who are really interested in testing for us is that we can't have everybody in there.
You mainly reject people, in fact.
Yeah, which is kind of, it's a bummer for everybody. We don't like doing it.
Now, in Levelhead news this week,
what's new?
We have a technological breakthrough for the ages. Okay.
Buckle your pants.
We have a thing we're calling a drop-down menu.
Mm.
Okay.
What is this?
It's like a little word. And when you click on it, more words come down off the bottom of it. And then you can choose the word that you want to click on.
Now, I have a problem with this, which is that we have not filed a patent yet.
Oh, that's, yes.
And now you just told everybody.
And now it's ruined and the whole world knows mm-hmm. about it. I bet before you know it, you're going to see this everywhere.
Tons of websites.
Websites, yeah. Primarily.
I can think of dozens of uses for it.
Yeah.
So we really boned this.
Yeah, but seriously,
from a financial perspective.
Somehow in... 6 years of making video games,
yep.
We have literally never conceived of using drop-down menus in our games.
I wonder how
for
many,
anything.
How many UIs we could condense
to a single drop-down menu?
Just a drop-down menu.
We tend to just kind of splay 1,000 buttons out across a thing and just make them into tabs mm-hmm. or whatever. So, you know, this is different. This is a new experience. Mm-hmm. We'll see where it takes mm-hmm. us.
It's exciting.
Very exciting. Also, we went... to the St. Louis Ballet.
Yeah.
Let's talk
about it. Saturday evening. So we went and saw Cinderella, right?
Yes.
Okay. that was the one we went to.
It was a lot of dancing.
Yeah, it was cool. It was really cool.
It was dope as fuck.
The people are jacked, first of all. The quads on these people, you could see them from probably space as far as just the sort of curvature, the cliff-like indents into them.
And the man butts were very good.
Man butts are tremendous.
It was a double neutron star on their back. And then, you know, like people are like, oh, you can bounce a quarter off it. No, you can't because the gravitational field.
It just sticks.
There's an event horizon
there's
on it.
There's an event horizon on
so
these
So time
butts.
Just stops moving. And so if you throw a quarter, it just hangs there because it's trapped mm-hmm. in time now.
Yeah. And it was a remarkable display of just what you can do with a human body.
Because
mm-hmm. I was watching this and I was like, if I tried to do... one of these moves.
You'd probably break
in half. I would just disintegrate. It'd be like that scene in Indiana Jones when the guy drinks from the wrong Jesus cup and his whole body melts.
Mm.
That's what would happen to me if I tried to do a single one of these ballet moves.
You just melt into a pile on stage.
Yeah.
While I was telling Adam, one of the scenes that are in the woods, and this is when all the different, the pixies of the different seasons come out and each one does its own little dance. And I was actually just very alarmed for everybody on stage because there are these cobwebs that had been drawn in the scenery. But each of the cobwebs was at least 3 yards in diameter, and the webs were visible.
Yeah, what made this?
And I was like, there's a fucking huge spider predator somewhere in this forest, and you guys are just dancing.
Just dancing around, completely oblivious.
This is extremely dangerous. I was very worried about it.
But this is the kind of universe where you can befriend mice.
That's true.
So it's possible.
And then mice can turn into people.
Yeah. So it's possible that the spiders are just real chill buddies that everybody just kind of hangs out with.
Let us hope so.
Maybe you can just ride the spiders.
It'd be a horrific intermission.
Yeah. Situation.
It'd be pretty spectacular if you could just saddle a giant spider and just ride it.
I feel like they'd be really smooth.
Yeah, I bet.
Because they always got multiple legs.
Oh, yeah. Right? That'd be a real, that's good suspension,
yeah.
I think is the term.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want one of those.
Yeah. So why did we go to the ballet? Well, the dads were in town and they were like, hey guys, you want to go to the ballet? And we said, fuck yeah, we want to go to the ballet.
Yeah, it was great. It was really cool.
I've never been. I don't think any of us have been to a ballet before. So, you know, if you're looking for something just fucking insane to watch.
It's crazy.
It is crazy.
The other thing that was nuts about it was there's a particular way of moving in ballet, which is basically like everything needs to feel like it's very flowy. Yeah. Right. And so you see some of them, you could tell who's really, really fucking good. I mean, all these people are great, but you can tell who's like that next level by the way that they are able to move, like as they're dancing, their arms are wobbling around, whatever else. They're so fluid that it sort of hypnotizes you. Yeah.
Actually, I there were a few moments where I caught myself. I was like, how much time has passed? Where am I? Just watching these flowy arms, yeah, legs. It's cool. It's crazy.
Crazy.
All right. Other news. last thing I want to talk about, at recommendation of a friend, I started reading a book called Originals, and it's about how nonconformists do shit. I think that's the subtitle.
Good paraphrase.
Yeah. No doubt. So the very beginning of the book is talking about the concept of the human tendency to accept defaults. Mm-hmm. So wherever you go in life, people say, here's how we do things. And some people go, okay, that's how I will also do it. And other people go, fuck that. I'm going to do something else. Mm-hmm. Right.
Like every PC gamer in the universe, when they boot up a game for the first time.
Right. Yeah. And you're like, here's the defaults. And the PC gamer is like, I'm going to set it to
not my house.
See, here's the thing. I have 5 monitors and I need the game to cover all of them for some reason. And so this is like the scene in Men in Black where it's a classic scene where Will Smith, I believe is the name of the character, Will Smith, is being quizzed by Tommy Lee Jones. And
that's the name of the other character.
Name of the other character. And they have all the applicants to join the Men in Black. They all sit in these just real fucking awkward, uncomfortable, egg-shaped chairs, mm-hmm. and they have to take a written exam. And there's a single table in the middle of the room.
But it's real far away.
It's real far away. And so all the people who are taking the test, they're all trying to like write on their hand, like they're resting the paper on their hands, or they're putting the paper up against the side of these shitty, weird egg chairs. Mm-hmm. And nobody can get a good writing position. People are punching holes through the paper. And finally, Will Smith, he looks over at the table. He's like, well, I'll just grab that. And he goes and he grabs a table and he drags it back to his chair. And it's making these horrible screeching noises the whole time. And then now he has a writing surface and nobody else has one, right? And so this is the kind of outside of the box thinking that allowed him.
He's got the right stuff.
He's got the right stuff to be a Men in Black.
That is why he was recruited, though, right? Because of his test performance, including just pulling the table over.
Right. So it's all about, you know, do you just accept things the way they are, or do you try to find better ways? And so the interesting statistic that they brought up at the very start of this book was there was a research firm that was tasked with trying to determine what was the cause of some salespeople doing better or worse on, I believe they were like phone call sales, whatever. So there were like 30,000 of these people. And at these call centers, they are always accumulating as much data as possible about the performance of their salespeople so that they can know whether they're hitting their numbers or not, right? So this is one of those professions that is very...
Very quantified.
Yep. So what they found was, weirdly, the strongest... the thing that was correlated the strongest with the performance of a salesperson was what web browser they used. So there was 4 web browsers that people used. There was Internet Explorer, Safari, Chrome, and Firefox. And the people who used Chrome and Firefox would stay in their jobs longer, miss fewer days of work, make more sales, get more promotions, blah, 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 blah. And so they thought, well, maybe it's because they're more technically savvy or something. Mm-hmm. So then they ran a bunch of tests. So they checked for typing speed, knowledge of keyboard shortcuts, knowledge of other software, et cetera. No discernible difference. And so, so what they believed to be the case was that basically people who boot up their computer see that there's a default option like Internet Explorer or Safari, and then go, maybe there's a better thing out there. Mm-hmm. They go get that new browser, and that's basically just a hint into how those people approach their work in general. So whenever somebody runs into a problem with their job, instead of going, well, I guess this is just how my job is and it sucks now and I'm just going to quit later. If somebody who doesn't just accept things as given gets confronted with a problem in their work, then they'll turn around and go, well, this kind of sucks about my job. I'm going to see what I can do to change it, right? And so naturally, those people will miss fewer days of work because they'll make their job work better.
So this is kind of that whole idea of not seeing your problems as problems, but as opportunities.
Exactly.
In some way, or something to design around.
Yeah, basically. Because if you passively just accept everything that comes your way without any belief that you can change it even, or attempt to change it, then if you don't like your situation, then you will just try to leave that situation, mm-hmm. right? So you'll cash in on more sick days. You'll take more vacation days. You won't get promoted because you're not happy. And if you're not happy, you're not delivering, you know, all that stuff. So I don't know. I think it's a pretty interesting.
Well, let me tell you a story about my bird feeder, Seth.
Is it related?
It is.
Okay.
I've got your standard bird feeder because I, you know, went to the store, got a bird feeder, whatever.
You were like, what standard? That's what
give
I
me
want.
The default, please.
Give me the default bird feeder.
So I get one of these. And the squirrels just eaten all of the seed out of this damn thing, right? It's apparently what the squirrels do. And then yesterday, a squirrel leapt from the fence to get onto the feeder and just snapped the top of it in half.
Okay. Classic squirrel move.
Classic squirrel move. Now it's just open. It's a feeding frenzy. It's just like an open bucket of seeds. Seeds are all gone today.
That was a crafty-ass squirrel.
It was really good. So I was like, well, this is silly. And I'd actually talked to our dad a little bit while he's here. And I was like, how do you deal with squirrels just stealing all your shit? He said, frankly, they're just always a nuisance.
So they get to, you have to stand out there and just punch them.
You just yell at them. Yeah. Try to provide an extremely violent
you challenge
sort of territory.
Them to a duel.
Yeah. Smack them with a tiny glove.
But he and I talked about it a little bit, but I was like, there must be more.
There must be a way.
There must be a way.
There must be a Chrome.
So here's what I found.
To the Internet Explorer of bird feeders.
And there is. So here's what I found. It's, I think it's made by Brome. Got one coming in the mail.
Okay. Yeah. There it is.
This is made by... it's like bird crumb. Brum.
Yeah, Brum.
So, it's made by Brum.
Is this a Google company? Is it an Alphabet company, perhaps?
Who knows? But they make this feeder, okay, that when... Basically, it hangs from a long sort of cable. And when a squirrel stands on it, the amount of weight that a squirrel has causes the cable to sort of... Or the feeder to go down, which causes all of the seed gates to close. and so the squirrels just get super pissed off. And so all of the reviews for it are hilarious. People are like, not only does it work, but it's hysterical.
Because the squirrels
they'll jump on it and then it will sort of like jostle a little bit. So they'll come off and then they'll gather up in a clump and like look at it and apparently just sort of scream about it. And someone reported that someone in their neighborhood already had one and suggested it and they got one. And for the squirrels who usually would just come by and just,
you know, oh yeah, now they're going to go to your neighbor's house.
Well, no, he said the best part was they apparently know what this is in that neighborhood. And so these four squirrels just came up to his brand new feeder and didn't even get on. They just looked at it and they're all like yelling at each other for like 10 minutes.
What the fuck are we going to do about it?
And then they just left. He's like, no one's even tried it.
Wow.
So I got one of those coming, man. I'm going to have myself some entertainment.
Awesome. Download
on top of
download Brome.
Download Brome for your yard.
My strategy for feeding birds so far has been to just, anytime I'm out pulling weeds or something, is every time I find an earthworm, I just throw it at the birds that come by. Mm. And I've got a little robin who just fucking loves hanging out every time I'm doing any garden work because he just gets these free worms all the
That's
time.
That's awesome.
And it seems that squirrels don't like worms. They at least don't. None have come to hang out with me while I'm...
If a squirrel starts eating worms around you, you should leave. It seems like a real bad infection sort of situation.
Yeah, I don't know.
That's how they get you.
Mm-hmm. That's how they get you. Download Brome today.
Download Brome. But yeah, I think the takeaway there is, you know, to always be thinking about what in your life specifically
have you just accepted but shouldn't have?
Yeah, because you have to understand that you actually have a lot of control over a lot of things in your life, just based on the decisions you make of, you know, who to engage with, what to do in a moment-to-moment basis, or even, you know, where to work or what your career path is or any of those things. And people tend to just go with the flow.
Or even small stuff. If you're like, man, every day I trip over my shoes when I'm like coming in the house.
Stop wearing shoes.
Stop tying them together.
Just burn down your house. You know, find a better designated spot for your shoes to go. Like, and there's a lot of stuff that you know, you don't even notice it, I think is the funny part. You'll just sort of...
It's just part of the background noise.
Yeah. And then every so often, I think that there's always a comedy of errors situation with most of these things where it's like all that small stuff that doesn't bother you. You might have a bad day and then you walk in your house and trip over your shoes and you're like, I have had it! And then you actually burn down the house,
then you
right?
you kick the shoes across.
And so I think it's, you know, you want to, in times of good, just step back and say, okay, you know, what about today or what about the last couple of weeks maybe gave me more friction than I would have liked? And is there a way I could, you know, manipulate
So my,
that?
One of my things that I'm doing is I'm slowly replacing my lawn with a clover field.
Mm-hmm.
I bought a 5-pound bag of clovers for like $40 and it's 1.2 million clover seeds. It's enough to cover, I think, like 30,000 square feet. I don't actually know how big that is sort of
right.
visually. It sounds
pretty good size.
It sounds big.
Mm-hmm.
So anywhere that their grass is dying in my yard, I'm just throwing fistfuls of clover seeds there because it's just way better than grass.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why. Why do people use grass?
I don't know. It's a default, man.
It dies all the time. You got to water the shit out of it. As soon as it gets hot, it's like, I'm dead now. I don't know. I have no way to deal with this situation, right? And then when it rains, then it grows 1,000 feet per minute. Mm-hmm. And then you got to go out there with a fucking army of machines and trying to, you know, tamp it down.
Mm-hmm.
And then 8 seconds later, it's back again.
But how are your neighbors going to know how important you are if you don't have a rich, deep lawn
that looks like a clover? Because my lawn is going to be covered in bees.
Jokes
I'm
going
to have a deep field of bees.
You won't be able to hear their disparaging comments over the thrum of all of the bees.
Just the hum of bees.
Maybe you should couple this by becoming a beekeeper.
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
Free
opportunities
honey.
Opportunities yeah. all over
Free
the place.
Honey for life. See, and this is what happens. Some people just say, I guess you have grass on your lawns. And now I have a lawn of bees and free honey. So, you know.
That's pretty rad. But we should say, though, also, that sometimes you do have to accept things. And that's where boundaries come in.
Mm,
you know?
Yes.
Because sometimes
I'm
you
with
just,
you.
Sometimes you just, so like, because we were talking about this earlier.
Like driving on the right side of the road.
Like driving on the right side of the road. You have to accept that. Someone tells you no when you ask them on a date. You have to accept that.
Yep.
Somebody says, hey, if you're doing this job application, this is the format your resume has to be in. You got to accept that.
Yeah.
You know?
I think, yeah, you have to understand. It's not just about going, I don't follow rules because I don't conform, right? It's
yeah,
more
it's
about
understanding the why of the thing.
Understanding why the rules are there and then thinking, maybe. Or not even the rules, but just kind of the way things are done.
Yeah.
So one of the examples in the book is the company Warby Parker that sells glasses online.
Uh-huh.
And this was in, I think, 2009 when they first started working on it as a few folks, naturally in Silicon Valley, because that's where mm-hmm. that's where you start companies.
Yep.
And the universal response they got was nobody's going to want this because people want to be able to try on the glasses and then see how they look. And if this was a good idea, then somebody would have already done this because there's already Zappos, there's all this other shit. And so their big question was, how come glasses are so fucking expensive?
Right.
Like, why are glasses $500?
And it's because one company owns all of them.
Exactly. It just turns out there's no competition
yeah.
and that's it. So they're like, shit. And actually with Warby Parker, they, for every pair of glasses that they sell, they also donate a pair to a needy country.
Mm-hmm.
So they're able to charge 1/5 the price and give away an extra pair of glasses.
Because it turns out it's just a fucking piece of plastic.
Yeah, because the normal markup is like 30x on glasses.
It's probably a lot more than that.
Yeah.
Because it's just a piece of plastic.
You know, so everybody else just accepted like, yeah, well, you know, glasses, they're real expensive.
It's crazy.
That's just the way glasses mm-hmm. are, right?
Yeah. I mean, they got all that glass in them.
There's so much glass, you know? Yeah. You ever buy a glass?
It's always expensive.
8 cents, actually. So, yeah, it's just good to be asking those questions. All right, speaking of questions, let's get on to some questions.
Segue.
Very slick.
These questions come from our listeners, I hope. And I assume. if you want to get your questions on to a future episode, you can go over to podcast.bscotch.net and slap a question in there. We don't have any drop-down menus yet, but that's a new thing we're going to be working on at some point.
No, I think we're going to keep them off of the website. Just I want some technological confusion where people come to our website and see no drop-downs and then go into our games and
it's
see only drop-downs.
It's pure drop-downs.
Yeah.
We're also going to remove all the game mechanics.
Yep.
It's just going to be drop-down menus.
And then we're going to be doing HTML5 games.
So in Crashlands, instead of you're like, okay, you want to go harvest, you want to go harvest a tree?
You got to say the drop down.
Yeah. You're not going to go do that anymore. Mm-hmm. Drop down menu. What do you want to do? Harvest. What do you want to harvest? Another drop down menu. Tree. What do you want to get from it? Logs. Mm-hmm. Boom, boom, boom. Three drop downs. Yeah. Streamline the shit out of the whole game.
Super
experience.
Super fun. And really we just need it so that our games are our website and our website is our games.
Yes.
You know?
So we'll have to do some work on the website end probably.
Yeah, I have to
get that short. Yeah. All right. First question comes from GURF99. Hey, dudes. Hope you're doing well. So I'm on a games course, and we're creating a VR game. Any tips to keep people excited and focused on creating rather than procrastinating? Because procrastinating is bad. Thanks.
The only thing we've found is teaching.
I think GURF is taking this course.
He's as part of a team.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So this is a sticky situation.
This is a group project.
This is your classic group project scenario. Mm-hmm. Yep.
Even when it's in VR, still not very good, you know?
Yeah.
Just this is usually what that situation is. So blockchain, still not going to be very good.
So group projects always have a very specific team composition. Mm-hmm. Okay. So just like
they have the one person who is going to do the work and everybody else.
Yes. So just like a Seth MacFarlane show, there has to be a talking creature of some kind. Mm-hmm. There has to be an incompetent father figure. Mm-hmm. There has to be a sort of dim-witted son. Mm-hmm. You know, like you got to run the whole gamut.
Gamut.
You got to run the whole thing. You got to do the whole thing. Mm-hmm. So in every group project, there's the person who does everything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there's the person who complains a lot.
The person.
And then there are the people you don't even know are there, really.
Yeah.
Yeah. And oftentimes you'll also have a person who wants to do everything, but
then doesn't actually do anything.
They don't do anything, but they also have real strong opinions about how everything should be done. Mm-hmm. Yep. So you got to have one of those, right?
It's kind of like going into a dungeon. You got to fill out your class.
You need your tank, your healers, your DPS. Yeah.
Complainers, et cetera.
Yeah. Your complainers, your doers, your thinkers.
Mm-hmm. So
you're emotionally unstable, wanter to doer things. Yeah.
So then the real question is, because this is not a question unique to game development courses or VR or anything. It's when you're in a school group project, because you are the tank, right? You're the one who's carrying the group. There's always one of those. Well, because this person had the foresight to send this question in already, which tells us that this is
this person is the tank.
This person is the person carrying the group.
Mm-hmm.
GURF is the tank.
Yep.
So what is your approach? What's your strategy?
Here's the thing. I never figured out how to do this effectively.
Yeah. I don't think
I ever did.
The thing that I figured out eventually was that I just did all the work and then didn't give anybody any credit.
Yeah. That was my,
what are they going to do? I made the slides. I did all the work. And so I listen to the end. I'll be like, and the key though is to detail all the things that you did in your little credit section, you know, when you're presenting, and also detail what everybody else did, right? Mm. So now you just get to have this beautiful satisfaction of getting to proudly show off the work that you did, which is great, and also not giving these fuckers their, you know, credit where it was not due.
Here's what I did. I did all the work, and then I gave shared credit.
Yeah, that's the classic approach.
Yeah, where I said, we did this.
Mm-hmm.
Because then
the boiling resentment inside of you can really take root, you know?
And then you sort of use that to fuel your progress through life.
Another strategy is to throw your entire team under the bus.
Mm-hmm. That sounds like your first strategy.
That does sound.
No, this is different. Okay. Because the first one is.
Well, you mean a literal.
No, because the first one is you tell it like it is, right? You do the work, you make a good product, but you tell it like it is. That's fine. The next one is, you take every other person as part of the project, you find a way to make the project work without those pieces, right? Okay. And then every time those pieces are supposed to be there, you just say out loud, you know, this was this other person's responsibility.
Well, Jeremy was supposed to do this.
You know, this isn't in here, but I managed to come up with a way to still make this work, right? And so now
you can make people look bad.
Yeah,
which is sort of publicly
great.
Shame them.
Yes.
Because people love that shit.
Well, this is interesting about group projects, right? It's like what is the intended good outcome?
They're horrible.
Well, people say that a group project is supposed to get you ready for the real world when you have to work with people.
And
all
that
the
is
time,
true.
Right? But why would you want to be there? It's kind of like all your teenage years. You're like, I just want to be an adult. I just want to be an adult, and then you become an adult, and you're like, I am viciously tired all day. And I have all these commitments
and your joints are making these noises.
You start groaning when you sit down.
When you sit down in a chair, you go,
Yeah. And then you're like, why?
And then when you stand up, you go,
why did I wish for this? So I guess the thing is that but the other thing is that it doesn't prepare you for the real world because there are consequences for fucking up your group project in a business sense, right? There are like long-term performance things you can get for doing well, all this other stuff, which are not even remotely.
See, I was playing the long game. Okay. Adam's approach is I'm gonna tear these people down
in ridges
in real time.
Yeah.
Like right there on the spot.
So you're doing the nefarious thing.
I'm taking an asynchronous approach. Oh,
because then since they all got the credit, then they appear to be good. And they also don't learn anything because they never suffer any consequences from their actions. Because
they still never tried.
Because they never tried. So they go out in the world having never failed, even though they are failures.
Because here's the thing. It's not my job.
True.
You know, it's not, I don't need the discord of sort of having people upset with me of not wanting to be in my group in the future because I just repeatedly humiliated them publicly and shamed them.
This seems like the best case scenario.
Yeah. I don't need that. You know, I want to have friends and I want people to like me. Mm-hmm. It's important to me.
But you also want to undermine their future by not calling them
out. Well, no, that's not something I'm doing. That's something they're doing.
Sure. Right? I mean, I don't know. I'm in negligence. You know, you have an opportunity to be like, look, Steve, you're not doing your shit. And I'm worried about your future, Steve. I think when you go to the workforce, because this is supposed to be a parallel.
But Steve's not worried about his future. I got enough things to worry about.
Why should you be worried about Steve's future?
I don't need to
worry
about everybody. Everybody is responsible for their own contribution. You know, you get out what you put in. And if Steve doesn't want to put anything in.
Sometimes in this scenario, you get out what everybody else put in if you're not careful.
That's possible.
And they didn't put anything in except maybe some garbage.
Right, except I always put everything in and then I get everything back out.
Here's what I found. None of the group projects that I've ever done actually had enough work
to warrant being a group project.
I have never, more than like two people. I could see maybe
I've never done a group project that had more work than a single person could do, frankly. So, I don't know. I remember one time we were visiting a game development club. And we were talking, they were making a game as a group project. Mm-hmm. And we were just kind of chatting with about what everybody was working on. And I will never forget that one person told us that their job was the pause menu.
Oh, yes.
And that's your quintessential group project, right? Mm-hmm. Having that many people on a project means there's a lot of communication that has to happen and a lot of time that goes into just managing who's doing what and everything. And invariably, everybody just gets a tiny piece of the work that, you know, isn't that challenging or interesting to them. And of course, they're going to procrastinate and not want to do it or whatever. Mm-hmm. So
there's no meaning to it.
Well, there's not enough interesting stuff to go around.
Yeah, there's no consequences and it's not interesting when you're doing a group project.
So maybe, you know, say, hey, we're going to put this credit screen at the end. And whatever you do, that's where you go on the credit screen. So that might be a way to motivate people to stay in it. Otherwise, I don't know, just do it. Just enjoy it yourself.
If you do the whole thing by yourself, you'll get a lot out of that project.
Okay, I've got a zany proposition.
Hit it.
All right, here we go. I'm going to put on my clown nose because this is going to get zany. What if you talked to your teammates?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay.
You're with me so far?
Yeah. With you.
I don't know if I like this.
And then you said,
hear it out.
And then you said, hey, I noticed that you haven't been spending a lot of time in the project. Is that because you're not happy with what your role is? And if so, what would you like to work on that you would be more excited about? Mm.
And here's their answer.
This is just my zany.
You get more points for also managing the work of other people while you're also doing your own work?
No, you never get more points.
Cool, okay.
Under any scenario. It's always going to be the case that your best... your most time efficient means of working is going to be to just do it and not worry about what everybody else is doing.
Right.
Because who has the time? You're busy. You know, you're taking 39 classes and you're making a VR game. So, you know, who has the time? Mm-hmm. So I guess what's the final verdict then? How do you resolve a group project?
You don't.
Pursue it as a solo project.
Yeah.
I don't know.
But if you do end up in a group with somebody who is equally as committed and they're just like, fuck yeah, let's do this. Oh, we're a team.
Sometimes it's awesome. Yeah.
That it's very rare. But when that happens, you
lock that down.
Mm-hmm. You lock eyes with that person.
And you say, we're starting a company together.
You merge
as
souls.
As soon as we get out of this.
Yeah. Cause that's your moment. Mm-hmm. You found it. All right. Next question comes from Farseer. Butterscotch Ass Brothers. That's us because Adam, Seth, Sam.
Yep.
Rumpus. Everything comes back to your backsides. So who has the best butt? Any hilarious butt-related stories? Regarding the above question, I have arse in my name. I'm qualified. This is from Farseer.
That's good. That's real good. Well, I think the
good butt
the story I have that is ass-related that I'm willing to share.
Ass-related stories are always...
I can't remember if we talked about this.
They're always touchy.
So they're always touchy. I was good at, yeah. All right. So during my treatment stuff for all that cancer back in the day, I'm very proud of my backside. So that is, I don't know if it's just like a subconscious thing, just gets stuck in here or what.
As you're walking down the street, you're like, I bet somebody's gazing.
I don't even think anybody's looking at it.
Someone is gazing.
I'm just like, I can flex it. It's good. It's good rump, you know, whatever. So
it's got fantastic protuberances.
It's got curves. So I go to this, one of these cancer treatment things, and they need to do some genetic testing. This is the second time. And what's required for this is not only a bone marrow biopsy, which hurts like a mother, but they take a bite out of your ass.
Okay? Who bites it?
Just like just someone with a clean mouth.
Doesn't matter who.
They just
brush their teeth real good.
It was a little horrible gun thing. And basically what it does is it, like, they put it up against your ass.
The butt gun.
And they click it, and you can hear it click. And then there's this brief moment, and then you feel the vacancy that they have created.
They just stole a piece of your ass.
In one of your perfectly round cheeks. It now has a crater that is too big.
They just cratered your ass.
Uh-huh. So the best part about this, I was like very annoyed by this, because I was like, what
the fuck? That sounds annoying.
And then...
It's kind of like, you know how when you don't tie your shoe, it's kind of like that.
Most of the other treatments, it's just like you get stabbed here and there, whatever else, but you're not going to have much of a mark left. But this one, I was like, you guys, you have ruined my pristine backside. So the worst part, fast forward to like maybe 3 months ago, my wife looks over and she's like,
obviously your ass is completely bare.
Well, I mean, that's insinuating.
Because you're at your own house.
I mean, my house is just naked, whatever. So she looks over and she's like, what's that?
What is
on
that?
Your backside? And I look over, and guess what? It's the scar.
Yep.
From them taking a bite out of my pristine back.
You just got to own this and tattoo an actual mouth around it.
Just like a
little beat, bite marks. Biting. You know, I think this is one of the things that kind of bums me out about... about medicine is how fucking seriously they take everything.
Yes. Right?
Because if I was the company making that instrument, I would have called it the butt biter,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
But I guarantee it was not called the butt biter.
Put googly eyes on it, and it would probably look like one of the aliens with the little mouth.
Yeah,
exactly.
Get a licensing deal, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It would be awesome.
Work with, who makes aliens? Ridley?
Ridley Scott?
I guess, yeah.
I don't know. Who owns Ridley?
I don't know. Do you guys got any butt stories?
I don't. I keep mine... contained.
Mm-hmm. I had a fresh pair of jeans just right on.
Yeah.
We've talked about this something like 100 episodes ago where my hot butt syndrome.
Oh, we have an episode named Hot Butt Legacy.
Hot Butt Legacy, which is when I had some disc squishes in my neck somewhere. No, my lower back. I also have some neck stuff.
Your back.
That's
stop the song there.
And then some other things. I had a disc sort of compression thing in my lower back, and so it caused part of my lower left leg to go numb,
mm-hmm.
while simultaneously my left butt cheek felt hot. It just felt like I was sitting on a hot pad all the time, and that was going on for about 3 months.
Nice.
That wasn't, you know, it's not super funny, but it was very interesting,
mm-hmm.
and it was actually kind of nice.
Did you feel a pleasant warmth?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if you do have that, you should probably get it checked out, because it's, mm-hmm. you know, it's not a good thing.
Yeah, I don't, I mean, the only sort of butt-related scenario that I can recount is, it's actually a pretty common one, which is, if you ever have gone quite a while without exercising, and then you do squats.
Oh, God.
It's the fucking worst.
Yep.
And I managed to time it out such that right before we flew down to Uruguay, and they're like, soreness in different parts of your body kind of comes at different times, mm-hmm. you know, relative to when you did the damage.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, for leg stuff, it's like there's a 48 hour sort of lag time, and then it reaches maximum pain. So Yeah, so I did a couple of, I did a bunch of squats 2 days before we left for Uruguay. just didn't think about it.
For 22 hours of travel.
Yeah. Then we had to sit in an airplane for, it was about 22 hours. It was it was excruciating. you gotta know your butt.
You do.
You know, and you gotta respect what it needs.
That's true.
So, all right, next question comes from CC Tech Wiz. How do you go about setting expectations and getting willing support from those around you to devote so much of your time to working on what you love? Do you ever struggle with balancing family time and taking time to sharpen your skill sets? Keep up the good work, bros. You never cease to inspire me in some way each week. Thanks.
Cool.
Thank you, CC Tech Wiz.
How do you balance it?
Well, first of all,
how do you get people on board?
Yes.
Okay.
So how do you do it?
So I think the big thing for me is it's actually about keeping a very regular and open stream of communication up. So for example, right now, a lot of my out of studio time is focused on doing some drawing practice stuff. So sometimes it means I come in actually to the studio about an hour early, like I did today, and then just draw here. Sometimes it means at night I'm drawing, sometimes I'm drawing at home in the morning. But essentially what's happened is I've just, I communicated sort of the bigger why to my partner and just said, hey, there's a skill that I really want, not just because I want, but because to me it sort of goes in line with, in my case, fulfilling this overall mission of just really bringing a lot of joy and happiness to people and also just making me a more effective teammate, period. Mm-hmm. And so when you talk about things on that really high level, then it's almost hard to not get behind it, right?
So yes.
Like if someone comes to you and they very sincerely, I think this is the problem people make sometimes, is they don't, they try to spell it in terms of the outcome that they want, as opposed to just saying, what this means for them in terms of how they view their life or their work or whatever else. And I think if you're really, really candid with someone about saying, hey, there's this way that I want to be or this thing that I want to be, and it's important to me because, I've just decided that part of my reason to be here is X, I want to bring joy to people, whatever else, then it's just hard to foresee a situation where someone's like, no, can't do that.
So I'm reading the book, How to Win Friends and Influence People. Mm-hmm. One of the key points in there is nobody gives a shit about what you want. Mm-hmm. They care about what they want. So if you are thinking about doing something that is potentially going to affect somebody else like this, maybe you are married, and so therefore your incomes go together and you're like, hey, I want to quit my job and make video games for the next 3 years. And I don't know how this is going to pan out. That's not a great sales pitch.
Yes.
and most importantly, it's only focusing on yourself. Mm-hmm. Right. And so I think making sure that you understand what it means for that person and showing that understanding and appreciation for what they would be bringing, for you to allow you to do that. And then also doing whatever you can to mitigate ways that it might affect them, right? So you might say, I'm going to be working at home the whole time, which means, this whole time I'll take care of the dishes just this whole time. I'm home. So I'm just going to take a few things off your plate. So you don't have to worry about some of the things that you normally have to worry about at home. So that way I can do my thing as well. Right. So just, you got to think about what that person needs as well.
Yeah. As far as the balance goes, I think it's really, again, just about having a really open line of communication and saying, hey, this thing that I would like to do essentially says that I'm going to need, 7-ish hours a week to do it. So instead of just coming and being like, I'm going to do it on this, and this, try to enter into it more and saying, this is really what I'd like to do. Can we figure out how to make it work? As opposed to just,
and then give up the right things.
Yes.
Because if you now start devoting all of your keeping up the house time to doing this new thing that you're trying to do,
but then you're still playing video games.
But then still play video games and watch TV. That's a real problem. Mm-hmm. You got to be giving up. You have to truly give something up if you're asking somebody else to give something up. And so you have to make sure that everyone's priorities are understood and not necessarily in the same order, but in approximately enough of an order, or at least that you're taking into account other people's priority lists. Because otherwise it's not good.
Yeah. You don't want the scenario where you say, hey, I want to quit my job. So we're going to be making half ish as much money. And that means you, my partner, will have to adjust your standard of living, or maybe our kids, you know, they're going to be eating a lot more oatmeal and less, you know, whatever the fuck. I don't know what kids eat.
Baby food, I think.
Rocks? I don't know. we can't get them the good rocks. They got to just eat the river rocks. So you're going to have to give all those things up. Our family's going to have to give those things up. And then one day your significant other comes home early from work and you're just there. You're on season 7 of The Walking Dead because all you've done for the past week is just watch TV while they've been gone. Just prepare. Yeah.
Well, prepare yourself for the storm. A lot of people think that wouldn't happen to them, but the thing to understand is
so easy to fall
when
into
you,
it.
Oh yeah. When you jump into essentially what is a more open time slotted thing like that, it's really easy for the wheels to just come right off.
And once they're off,
you're just down the street, you know, you're in the next neighborhood at this point.
And where the fuck are the wheels? Nobody even knows. They're gone now. You can't get them back on. So you got to really have discipline. You got to really take care of things. And we've also known some folks, who, for example, maybe they have a full house at home with, you know, kids and, you know, family and everything. And they wanted to start up their own game studio. So we have a buddy who runs a board game studio here in St. Louis. And, you know, in those kinds of scenarios, you may need to talk about actually getting a cheap office space somewhere so that you can leave the house and be away from the chaos, you know, because children are great and they love you and they want to be around you all the time, which is fantastic, except for when you're trying to, do stuff that doesn't involve them, which is generally what your work will be. So, like Sam said, you just got to think about what everybody needs and talk with them and work with them to try to come up with a way to make it happen.
Yeah, just don't hide anything. Just be super open about it. Understand, and if you totally fuck up one day, just be like,
fuck that one up.
I totally fucked up today.
Yeah, and always try to understand what you're asking somebody else to do and make sure you then make it clear, I understand what I'm asking you to do, and then do your best to mitigate those consequences.
Yes. All right. Next question comes from Angry Muffin. Okay. We're looking back pretty far here. In episode 17, Seth, you went to Chipotle and got a TARDIS burrito. Have you seen this any other times? Have you gotten one yourself or even tested the limits of how much can fit in a TARDIS burrito? What is your favorite stuff to put in a burrito?
A TARDIS burrito being just a burrito that has so much in it that you can't even understand how it was wrapped.
It's a burrito that's larger on the inside than it is on the outside. The TARDIS is the reference to the Doctor Who spaceship, which disguises itself as a police call box.
For reasons.
And when you open it up, then it's fucking huge on the inside. Mm-hmm. So that's...
Have you had any more burrito situations or just general food?
It was just the one. I don't know how it happened. I asked for just a sort of inconceivably ridiculous quantity of food to be put in this burrito.
They did it.
And that one time, the person just shrugged like it was nothing and just floop, just burritoed the shit out of it. I don't know I don't know what happened. It was like a 39-pound burrito. So in the meantime, I've tried to replicate this scenario in various situations. Every single time, the burrito explodes. It splits apart. Juices are flying out.
This must have been just like a once in a lifetime burrito.
I think there was some kind of a traveling wizard who goes town to town,
some magic on it,
or maybe
they go town to town and work at Chipotle's.
Maybe the person who made this burrito had a spectacular butt that warped space-time in that area.
So the food became more dense.
Yeah, being put in there. But then when they gave it to you, then it had to...
Like on the inside.
Yeah, it lost those strange gravitational effects.
So you're telling me that person was a ballet dancer.
Probably.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Sounds about right.
Part-time ballet dancer, part-time burrito creator.
Yeah, now I will say, if you're looking for a good burrito, there's a place called Pancheros. Okay.
Guys, you've talked about this, I think, for like 5 years.
You've never gone.
I've never gone.
So Pancheros.
I've gone once. It was fine.
Pancheros. they have the tortilla as these little dough balls, and they slap the dough ball onto one of those hot compressor things, and they just go, chunk, and then it just fucking flattens out into this giant, freshly cooked tortilla instantaneously, like magic. And it's just a heavenly experience. Mm. So I don't know where it is. It's not in St. Louis. There's one in Iowa. That's all I know. So if you're looking for a road trip, go get yourself a burrito. Our next question comes from Aviox. Are any of you owners of VR, virtual reality, hardware? What is your opinion on the current tech and experience?
I have an old Oculus Developer Kit 2.
Do you use it? Have you ever
used it? I have used it once.
How was it?
It was a large pain in the ass to like put up. And that was also back when nothing was VR yet. So this was kind of the, as things were starting to happen. So there was nothing in VR on Steam. There were some games that you could sort of like make work, sort of, right? But it was kind of in this weird hacky way. So all the games that I tried it with had basically, there were two problems. One is I felt like I was looking through a screen door, which I think has to do with pixel density, and I don't know if that is solved.
That was my experience as well.
Yeah.
Several years ago when I tried it.
Yeah, so presumably that's better. And then the second problem was that the target reticle, because I think I tried like Half-Life and then some other first-person shooter style game. The target reticle is normally in the center of your screen, was not being cast out anywhere, so it was like 3 inches in front of my face. Like,
floating.
Just like floating 3 inches in front of my face. Of course, I'm like, sure, because you have cross-eyed. Yeah, exactly. Because I'm like cross-eyed looking at this fucking target reticle that's 3 inches from my human body. Because I guess if you look
past it, then now there's two target reticles.
Exactly. And they're blurry, right? So that was my real only experience with VR. I still have the thing. Every once in a while, I go downstairs to try to find a cable or something. I have to like throw the Oculus DK2 out.
You just hurl it across the room.
But I was super impressed. They have a little demo thing that came with it where it's just you sitting in a chair looking at a computer monitor, but in VR, right? Just a little cute demo that, and like it doesn't do anything. There's just some kind of stuff you can look at. But I was super impressed how good the head tracking was even then. That was something that was out
5 years ago, yeah, maybe?
Probably 4 years ago, something like that. Yeah, and I just remember, you know, putting it on and then looking around and then just, it just moved exactly as my head did. And I was like, how the fuck is this working? And I remember looking down at where my body was supposed to be and there was nothing there because they didn't, again, it was very simple.
They forgot. Thing.
They didn't put a body there. And so I looked down and I don't exist. And like the feeling that provided was really interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't actually have one. And I've only done the demos and stuff at GDC and such. I haven't tooled around with it too much. All to say, I have no idea. I got no idea how good any of it is. All I know is it's real expensive right now.
Yeah.
So,
and I would put money on it making me really sick. So that's the main reason I'm not willing to invest in it is because, so I think I mentioned I was playing Subnautica a few weekends ago. I only played for like an hour and then just had a horrible headache. It was just terrible.
You know, my take on it is, I don't know if I want to go that deep.
Maybe it's too deep.
I already feel I've got a dog in the house who needs some attention. And I live with my significant other who also occasionally, you know, needs things from me,
like
just for me
communication,
to communicate and make eye contact, you know, just human all these things. Kinds of things. And so even if I'm playing a game with like soundproof headphones on, that already is like, I'm shutting myself out right from everything around me. And I don't always feel that great about it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yesterday I was playing Subnautica a bit, and Diana was working on something, and she had something cool happen with her business stuff, and so I just see this hand waving sort of off in the periphery because she's yelling my name, and she couldn't get in.
You know?
So she had to wave her arms around a bunch to get my attention. So
yeah, and I mean I can't imagine what my household would be like if let's say I'm spending 2 hours a night playing video games. If instead now I can't see anything around me. Nobody can make eye contact with me. I can't hear anything. And I'm just flailing around like a fucking maniac in a room completely inaccessible to everybody else sort of visually or anything.
You think it's too removed?
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm no longer home effectively, right? So it's like falling asleep in class. Like you're not there anymore, right?
I think I think that can be okay with correct boundaries put on it.
Yes.
You know, because I feel, so with my soundproof headphones, for me, I use them when I'm at home if I'm working on stuff, because that means I need to be in the zone, you know, don't bug me with stuff, right? And so it means the same thing that it does at work. If I'm playing a game, though, then it's like sort of, my wife and I are usually playing games at the same time.
Right.
So we don't need to be talking about that stuff, you know? And we'll still yell over each other while we're doing stuff so that, you know, because if she's playing one game and something hilarious or amusing or interesting happens, then she'll make sure that I know about that and vice versa, right? And so it becomes part of the event where we get to get real immersed by wearing soundproof headphones because it does change the experience, makes it more awesome.
It does.
But we just know that in the circumstance where we're playing games, like that's just fucking around time. Fucking around time can be interrupted.
Yeah.
You know? And so I think if you have the right policies or have like time limits or whatever, I think you can be completely okay. You know,
but I mean, for me, this is the same kind of reason. So I play a lot of MMOs, but I've noticed that as the years have passed and my real world responsibilities have amplified, that I am much less willing to go into voice chat with people because it's sort of like just being on the phone with somebody when somebody else is in the room, right? Now every now and then I would just like say something and then, you know, maybe my wife is like, what? I'm like, oh no, it's just I'm talking to some random weirdos on the internet, right? And so, I don't know. I'm just maybe it's an age thing or something, but like as I get older, I'm less interested in like being so immersed in a game experience that I can't even conceive of what's happening around me. Mm-hmm. Right. So I don't know.
It's interesting.
We'll see. Although I think racing games would be pretty fucking badass.
Yeah.
With VR.
Yeah.
So I'm still willing to try it because that just sounds real crazy and like something you probably can't get without it. All right. Next question comes from Blonde Viking 91. Your bit on ethics in player made content brought up my head of publishing's affirmation that time to penis is a very real measurable phenomenon.
TTP.
With regard to any shared player input, starting even with usernames. We make social mobile games and we suffer for it.
Yep.
So
I think the thing that you have to be aware of is that TTP is always zero.
It's always zero.
Yeah. The moment a thing comes online, it's already there. It's already happened.
It's more like if it's possible to build somewhat of a symbolic phallic shape with
or the tool. Even just enter text.
Yeah. That allows you to do that, right? That's the thing.
Someone will just name themselves penis. That's what their name is now.
Now you got to deal with it.
Now you got to figure out what are you going to do about that?
I'm curious to see sort of how this shakes out. Since Level Head is entering user-generated content territory, we're gonna do quite a bit of legwork to make it hard to just throw penises all over the place.
Speaking of which,
our username system is pretty funny right now, though, because if people complain about your username, it makes you think your username is still what you said it was, but everybody else just sees it differently.
Yep. Do we replace it with something real goofy?
Yeah, it comes from the random name generator.
Nice.
So, yeah, you might be like a wonderful, illustrious penguin or something.
That's long.
Yeah.
All right. Well, so next question comes from Oh No, I'm Dead, who says, you never published the Crashlands creator.
That's true.
For fear of toxic culture and penises everywhere.
That's not the main reason, but that was a sub-reason. Yep.
However, you are now making a game that is half editor. How are you going to screen for penises and not just naughty language?
I love that everyone's so concerned about this. It's true. It's a seriously hard thing.
Well, yes. This is an interesting phenomenon.
Mm-hmm. We've tried to make it hard to do it for somebody to do something that you can just easily tell they have done, right? So like in the editor, you could make various kinds of shapes, but they're little blocks, you know?
Yeah.
It's going to be hard to tell what has happened. We're not going to provide sort of a large scale display of it. So a player of the thing that you make won't be able to zoom out and see this huge thing that you've drawn.
That's true. Dicks would only be able to, like a functional dick in level head blocks would only be maybe like 5 tiles tall because you couldn't otherwise see it.
So you're saying it's just a bunch of blocks.
Right. Yeah. And then it can't be too small because then you can't even make the shape really.
Yeah. So I think we found the right size window.
It's baked into the game design. I mean,
it actually was. We had this discussion when we talked about people being able to zoom out, and they had asked that question. Well, one of the consequences of that is that people will put horrible things as they zoom out because they'll use it as pixel art.
Because you just basically get higher resolution of the game grid.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So if we just don't let people do that, then they become less able to do those things. Then otherwise, we're not sure what the system is going to be yet, but we're going to have very strict moderation on how content goes in front of people. Because the other thing about what we're trying to do here is, you know, surface good stuff, but nobody has the right to have their stuff surfaced. Mm-hmm. So if other players report that somebody's misbehaving, a really easy consequence for us is just to say, well, we won't make your content rise to the top, the stuff that you make. If you've got, you know, friends who are following you or whatever, like, sure, they can still see your stuff, I guess, but nobody else can. And so now people can police themselves and police their own content.
Yeah. And there's some easy stuff. Like, so because of the way in Levelhead, because of the following system, then we have a way for you to sort of police what content gets sent to you. So if you're following somebody who makes some kind of horrible shit in their level, you can report it, and you can also just unfollow that person, and now their content won't get delivered to you. And then by reporting that level, then you're going to make it so that that level will be suppressed somehow in the search results, right? So because we have a section of the game where we're just calling it the level browser for now, but where you can search and look at levels by, you know, top rated or most popular or whatever based on different time periods. So in the past week or the past day or whatever. But obviously we're going to set it up so that if a level gets reported a bunch of times, then it's not going to be in those lists, right?
Yeah, you'd have to find it by finding the person who made it, in which case now you have control over whether you see that or not.
Yeah. And this is a difficult problem because of the sheer volume of stuff that gets made. We don't want our new job after we publish Levelhead to be finding dicks and deleting them, right?
Like that's no thanks.
That's not why we do this. So we need to come up with some really good moderation mechanisms that basically make it so that content tends to just kind of fall out of existence if players find it objectionable, but without very much or any.
And then users who generate it repeatedly get slapped around enough that they stop.
Yeah, eventually they won't be allowed to publish or something. But I think a lot of platforms and games and companies seem to err on the side of making sure they don't remove content that isn't offensive. So they make it actually very hard to remove offensive content as a consequence. And then they also need to rope in real humans to verify that, was this really offensive? And they have all these shades of just how offensive is it? Where's the line? Mm-hmm. And we're going all the way on the other side, where we're just saying if people tend to think it's offensive, that's sufficient. Mm-hmm. Even if not that many think it's offensive, that's sufficient, because the consequences, if we make the consequences light enough so that we don't have to worry about, did we nuke someone's account when we shouldn't have, you know, if we can try to find some balance where people don't have to see stuff they don't want to see, and we don't have to worry about whether or not we have done damage to somebody that we shouldn't have. We want to find some sort of a line that we can walk that allows us to.
And then the next thing we have to worry about is people review bombing.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, and people will, because people will, they'll abuse these systems. But if the consequence of that is that your level is still there, people can still play it if they follow you, you know, all that kind of stuff, then the consequences are actually very minor to you.
Right.
This when he review bombs you.
Right. And yeah, so there is that final question, which is any moderation tool, basically any tool is also a weapon.
Yep.
Right? A hammer can put a nail in, but it can also put a nail into a face. So you always got to think about how could somebody use this in a way that would ruin everything. And I think the real question with sort of the review bombing thing is, you know, we're going to have something akin to sort of top charts, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, top rated games or whatever. And if there's a collection of, say, 100 players even, whose whole thing is they just as a group go and just continually report all the top levels to suppress them or whatever. Mm-hmm. Just to be dicks, because, you know, sometimes people just
are.
It's the internet. Mm-hmm. So we would need to put mechanisms in place where basically if, for example, like if these people engage in this behavior, that we can do stuff like make their reports essentially not count. Mm-hmm. So they would think that they're reporting and we would still let them do it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, it never goes.
Yeah, the key is to prefer muting over blocking whenever possible, because people then just don't know that they're being policed. Mm-hmm. And if they don't know they're being policed, they can't come after you.
Because otherwise, that's how they get you.
That's how they get you. And that's also how they figure out how to get around the checks that you put in place. But if they're invisible, and as far as the user can tell, they did, and this is why the strategy for bad usernames is just to have the user not know that other people just see a different username now.
Mm-hmm.
Because then, it's going to take them a long time to realize what has happened. And by then, the disconnect is large, right? Between making the decision that caused it and actually seeing it.
I still like that Spider-Man video we found, the Spider-Man video game back in like early 2000, where if you put in any swear word for the name of your save, then Spider-Man just appeared and punched it and randomized the word.
Yeah.
It was like this. Ass, and yeah, then it was like watermelon.
We were talking about this, and I was like, yeah, but the problem with this strategy is that it actually encourages users to put in bad words.
Yeah, you're like, what bad words can I put in that Spider-Man knows about?
Exactly.
And now it's a fun mini game.
Yeah.
Which, you know, that's its own thing, I guess.
I mean, it is, but now you've encouraged people to explore the entire space of allowed names.
That's true.
Because that's
true,
but
they might end
do.
Up on like their 40th ranked vulgar name as opposed to their top 10 rank, you know?
No, because now people are going to ask, how horrible can I get it and not get punched by Spider-Man? You know?
Yes. So they'll do all kinds of leet speak things, swapping out letters for symbols, you know?
Yep.
So it's better to have people like, they'll put a word in and you're like, oh yeah, great, we accepted that. And the person's like, hee hee hee. And then we're in the back also going, hee hee hee. Because they don't know that we know. And then 3 weeks later.
We got our eyes on you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Buddy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it is going to be very interesting once we go live just to see what kinds of
nonsense
people get up to. And then try to come up with whatever strategies we can to just kind of gently let people. Again, there's like the mental image in my brain always when dealing with this stuff is the toddler trying to punch somebody where you just have your hand on their head. You're just keeping them at a distance because they can't reach you.
Let them keep swinging.
You just let them keep swinging, tire themselves out, eventually they go to sleep.
They go take a nap.
Yeah.
Maybe they grow up a little bit, come back later and enjoy themselves.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, where we're at in terms of our studio's trajectory is we believe that mastering web shit is the term.
I believe it's a jargon.
Mastering web shit is real important for our future because having our players be able to form communities and have us be able to talk to our players, all that stuff allows us to grow everything and sort of roll our successes forward. But I got to admit, I am very apprehensive about just
all of it.
What this is going to mean in terms of what we have to do day to day, in terms of dealing with these kinds of problems. Mm-hmm. So
we might be like, hey, this is our course now. And then we'll launch Level Head and be like, never mind.
We're unpublishing.
We're
unpublishing this.
Single player. Yeah.
All the web stuff is off. You can now only play your own levels. You can't talk to people. We're also deleting everything. Mm-hmm. Just all of it. So.
Yep.
We'll see. All right. Well, that's all the time we have for this week. We'd like to thank our producer, Fat Bard, for making us sound good. Thanks to our community moderators who keep our Discord and forums running. If you'd like to get more involved in the Butterscotch community, you can hop into our Discord server, which is at discord.gg/bscotch, and come say hello. Also, congratulations to Discord for surpassing 90 million users this past week.
Yeah.
That was pretty good.
They're only 3 years old.
That's nuts.
Yeah. They've somehow surpassed us. Also, if you'd like to adorn your body with Butterscotch merch, you can check out our shop, which is over at shop.bscotch.net. We've got mugs, stickers, shirts.
That's it.
Posters also.
Posters. So if you'd like any of those things, then get on over there and get those. Also, if you'd like to send us something, we have a mailbox, which you can find over at mailbox.bscotch.net. Nothing alive, nothing that will spoil. Thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Goodbye.
Bye.